Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, it's me, P.
And me, S.
And you're listening to the Girl on Girl podcast. But it's not what you think.
But also, it's kind of what you think.
Welcome back to another episode of Girl on Girl. If you're new here, I'm P. Normally, I have my co-host and partner in crime, S, but today it's just going to be me covering this episode. We do have a new season launching in October with some exciting new topics and guests, so make sure to stay tuned for that. On today's episode, we're joined by one of our favorite queer couples on the internet, Eden and Jay. They have 560K plus followers across TikTok and Instagram and have built such a powerful and supportive community around nurturing healthy relationships and celebrating queer love. We asked them everything from their toxic tendencies in past relationships to the moment they knew they wanted to marry each other. My girlfriend and I actually had the pleasure of meeting Eden and Jay over the weekend while they were in Toronto, and they are an absolute vibe. They're such a lovely, fun couple, and we had a blast taking them to some of our favorite spots in the city. Thank you so much, Eden and Jay, for being so open and vulnerable on the pod. We hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed the convo. Well, I'm glad we could finally make this happen. We've been so excited.
Us too. Honestly, like the last 2 months have just been the most chaotic ever in our entire lives of being together. So thank you for your patience.
Congrats, first of all, on your wedding.
Thank you. It's been in the works. We eloped during the pandemic. So it was, we were just excited to have like our dream wedding with our friends and family and do all that.
Just love time coming for sure.
Definitely. It looked beautiful. Like my girlfriend and I were like sobbing to your TikTok videos. Like just
this
stuff is so sweet. Honestly.
She blew me away with her vows. Honestly. We were all like, what the heck?
I blew myself away. I didn't even know what was going to happen because I wrote it like morning of.
You killed it. You wouldn't think it was like the morning of. I always feel like if I did that, I'd panic, but maybe that's a little better because it's just, you know, coming from the heart at that point. You're just like, this is just what I'm feeling. And here it is, right?
We were always together because we had so many things that we were both like working on for the wedding. So I think just getting like some time alone where I could like write this, where I wasn't needed for something was, I think, the biggest challenge. So pulled it off.
Tell us a little bit about yourselves and what are your pronouns and how do you identify?
My name is Jay. I identify as a lesbian, if I had to put a label on it, and I go by she, her.
And my name is Eden. I identify as bisexual, and I go by she, her as well.
And do you both remember the first time you realized you might be queer? Like, was there an aha moment for both of you?
I definitely have an aha moment reflecting, and we laugh about it now, but it's so cute. It really is. Anytime I had a really pretty teacher in elementary school, I made it a point to give her like the biggest bouquet of flowers and like Valentine chocolates and just like really go ham on like making sure they felt loved and like pretty on Valentine's Day. And I always made my mom go out of her way to get me like that bouquet and like, and it's funny because now thinking back, I'm like, she didn't think I was gay because that's not like a normal request. I would always tell her, hey, like I need a bouquet of flowers and I need like the prettiest chocolate arrangements and like
that's
the biggest
so cute.
Heart. Yeah. But like, I like thinking back, like if my daughter did that, I'd be like, huh, interesting.
You might have a little crush.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
maybe
so
she was style about it. Maybe she knew,
but that was like my aha moment. Like anytime I had a pretty teacher in elementary, I was like goo goo gaga over them.
That's so sweet.
I think that was so cute. Like, I wonder if your teachers like were onto it too. Maybe.
Maybe.
Why does Jay keep giving me flowers and it's no longer Valentine's Day? Yeah, that's just her true Piscesness. Like, she loves gift giving. That's totally. Like a big part of her love language. So it's cute to hear like little you. It's still you. It's still very much a you thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I think I came out later. For sure. I came out later in life. I think my aha moment was really, I don't know. I was a workaholic, and I think I used to just like bury myself in work and use that as like the biggest excuse as to like maybe why I wasn't vibing with like my, I guess, like ex-boyfriends at the time. And I didn't want to get married. I didn't want to have kids. So that was like never part of like my journey and my future and my, like what I wanted in life. And I think like it came down to, there was this like really close friend that I had that I would hang out with like all the time. And you know, when you have a friend and you're like, let's just make up for fun, you know, like it's just funsies. And
so that's a part of my aha moment for sure. So yes.
Then I think I didn't realize how often I was asking for these like funsy kisses. And I think it was an aha like way later for me. I don't think I realized it until I came to LA, because where I grew up in Northern California, there wasn't a lot of like gay Latinas or gay like queer people who like looked like me or that I would see around that were open at the time. And so I don't think it clicked that like, oh, those weren't funsy kisses. Like, I actually like those more than, you know, what I was getting at the time. And so I think that to me was that aha moment.
Yeah. And I think the way you pointed out that there was a lack of representation is huge. And we bring that up a lot on the podcast, probably like every episode, just because even for me growing up, it took me a long time to realize I was a lesbian, because I just, you know, I wasn't seeing anyone that really looked like me. And being Indian too, I was like, I don't know, I only saw like Rosie O'Donnell, really saw Ellen, you know, and I just,
yeah,
like it could be me.
It was Carmen from The L Word, I think, was like,
oh my
that
gosh. She,
like, I was like, oh, she looks like me. Like, this is like her thing. This is what's happening. This is what I want. And I think once you saw that it was possible, then that's when I allowed myself to explore that route even further. And then thank goodness there was like Tumblr at the time, where I got to keep like searching all Carmen's makeouts like in different angles and all those things. And so it really does, to your point, representation absolutely matters, because once you can see that it's possible, then you can really see it for yourself.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up Carmen. Did you guys watch like the new L Word Gen Q?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I wanted Carmen.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. We always try to support all queer representation across media.
Yeah.
And we were hoping for Carmen. Like, we were like, this is the time to shine. This is her time to come back.
She went on TikTok and said, like, I'm ready. Tap me in, coach. And I'm all like kind of surprised.
If you guys are comfortable, can you share your coming out story, or even if you had one?
Oh yeah, we've shared it many times. I think mine is a little more lengthy. So I came out by force. I wasn't planning on coming out to my family. I grew up in a very Catholic household, and I knew that being gay or queer was just not in the cards for me. And I had already known that I was gay early on, like in high school, hence the teachers and like always befriending the pretty girls in my classes. And yeah, my cousin, who was a year younger, got outed out by my mm-hmm. family. They so happened to be driving by our neighborhood, and they saw her make out with her girlfriend, and that caused like the biggest commotion. And so one day we were at a carne asada, like a barbecue, and we were all hanging out, and my mom decided to gay bash my cousin. Mm-hmm. It was really intense, really horrible. I mean, every obscene word you can think of was said, and I just couldn't stand and just watch her get treated like that. So I decided to just out myself. So I told my mom, like, if you're going to talk to her, that way you might as well just say that to me, because I'm also gay. And that was like the end. My mom was so livid. She literally grabbed me by my hair and took me out of the party, took me home, and just like, she couldn't believe that I had, you know, made her feel so embarrassed, and she couldn't believe that I was like this lesbian, like, how dare I, you know, I'm going to hell. She disowned me all in like 24 hours. The very next day she checked. Yeah, it was nuts. The next day she checked me out of high school and got me a one-way ticket to live with my dad in Central America, who I hadn't seen since I was like 7. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you can't come back to the US until you're straight.
My God.
Yeah, it was intense. It was a lot. And now thinking back, I'm just like, I don't wish that upon my enemies, you know. It was just very traumatic and just surreal to not only be taken out of like your comfort and like what you've known to be home, but now to be placed in a different home with technically strangers and in a different environment, right? Like, I grew up in the US, I'm born and raised in the US, and I was sent to like go to school in Central America, where the kids were like, well, you're not Latina enough to like be part of our group. But then I didn't feel Latin enough being, you know, having first generation parents. So it was just a lot of trying to understand what these feelings were.
I mean, that just adds trauma on top of trauma, right? Like, she just accepted her sexuality and like came out and then gets banished to a whole different country. And I think that was the first time you were ever on a plane.
Yeah, like, ever. This was the first time I ever was on a plane. First time I ever flew by myself. There was a lot of firsts.
Just checked you out of school, said come back when you're here.
And I lived there. I lived in Central America for a year. Once I realized that I was a U.S. citizen, and in reality I could fly back when I was 18, because technically I would be an adult, then the like everything kind of switched. My mom was able to bring me back because I gave her an ultimatum. I basically said, you know, you either bring me back now or I come back when I'm 18 and I'm never going to talk to you again.
Like it's kind of cut ties.
So I came back and we sort of patched it up. I never really got an apology. Especially in the Latino community, like, it's just very, it's very like
sweep it under the rug,
like the elders know what's best, you kind of just have to abide. And yeah, so we kind of just swept it under the rug. It was fine for a couple of years, and I was able to bring girls around or like whoever I was dating, but it was never really like accepted fully, you know. It always felt like I was stepping on eggshells, or like nobody really wanted to say like Jay's girlfriend. It was like Jay's friend, you know, is coming to dinner.
Yeah. Or it's not taken seriously, right?
Exactly. It's like dismissed. And I have two sisters and they're both straight. And it was pretty obvious how different they treated their boyfriends versus like whoever I was dating. But when I brought Eden around, I knew pretty early on that she was the one. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted my mom to like meet her, and
I'm pretty great with him.
Yeah, totally. And it was a whole thing.
I wasn't worried.
Yeah. And like, we had asked my mom if we could do like a joint Thanksgiving, because her family lives in NorCal and my family's in SoCal. And
like, when we first started dating, we used to be close. Like, believe it or not, like, her mom like asked me to call her mom too. And like, Mother's Day, she was like really like inclusive of me. Mm-hmm. She would like want to hang out all the time. Like, there was a trip that we went to Vegas together. She thought it was good luck, so she asked me to sit on her lap while she played like slots or whatever. And I was like, okay. Like, Jay's a very bigger person. I think that's where I, you know, learn from her and I've grown from her, is that she's like so forgiving and gives people chances. Mm-hmm. And when she told me her coming out story, maybe it just wasn't for me to understand what her forgiveness journey was, but I do love this person and I do want to support them. And if she wants a relationship with her mom, I'm going to be as supportive as possible, you know, as long as she like respects me as well. And for the most part, like, we got along, like, we all got along. We would hang out every Sunday. And the first holiday, you know, I spent it with Jay's family, because that year was the first year I had just lost my mom to cancer. So I wasn't even ready to go back home and like pick up where my life was. So I just told my family, I'm not going back to NorCal and I'm staying in LA. And they all respected it. They didn't push me or anything. But now that it was the second holiday, I only see my family like Christmas and Thanksgiving. So I wanted to like bring up that conversation in the summertime just to like kind of test the waters, maybe like mentally prepare everybody for this conversation.
Yeah. And so I asked my mom if we could do a joint Thanksgiving. We would host it at our house and
everybody didn't have to worry about anything.
We would just take care of everything. And it like pissed my mom off. Really, it really ticked her off. And she just immediately disowned Eden. And she like didn't want anything to do with us.
Like when it comes to fight or flight, I'm definitely a fighter. And so for me, I think the biggest thing I had to like do in the moment was like kind of like lock my jaw shut as tight as I could, because the moment it's opened, like I don't care about like salvaging relationships. I'm the type to like cut people off and like burn that bridge and never look twice.
Very Gemini.
So if I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna go out big.
I was gonna ask what your sign was.
I'm a Gemini, so it's like let's cut this and like I'm gonna leave like just ashes left. But I had to think of, for the first time, somebody outside of myself. So I had no idea after this whole interaction if Jay would ever want to salvage something. So I think the best thing I can do is just like walk away. Mm-hmm. And I like my phone, left my bag, left my everything. I just like walked out the door and just like went into the car, because I just was so afraid of if I opened my mouth, like there wasn't going to be any coming back from that.
Right. And words can be really like, sometimes you can't forget that, you know? So
yeah, and I feel like, I don't know if it's like any other POC like communities, but in the Latino community, like it's very common for people to have like quick tongues, especially in like the Salvadorian Central American like countries. They're just, so my mom is very,
she can cut
very deep very fast, and I grew up in like a very toxic environment like that, so to have her just disown me for the second time and now do it in front of my partner, not something she could come back from.
It
so
really taught me a lot of empathy for Jay and like truly understanding how, like what upbringing she had, and like if this is how she talks to me and she just met me, I'm trying to imagine what it was like living every day with this person and like feeling like this and being talked to like this, because this didn't seem like a first time like thing for her. So I, if anything, it really taught me how to have more patience and empathy when it does come to learning communication and some of Jay's like triggers and some of her defense mechanisms, because she had to survive in this environment of constant defense and like dodging these like, you know, quick tongue things. So like I learned a lot that day, and I learned a lot about you, and I have like a lot, I still have a lot more empathy for like how you were raised and how you grew up, aside from the coming out. Like that wasn't traumatic enough, like seeing it firsthand how intense it could be was just like, wow, you're such a strong, and like the fact that she's still like a kind and selfless amazing person and you grew up in that, it just like I'm so like, you surprise me every day still to this day.
And like the strength that takes too, you know, like I think forgiveness is huge, and the fact that you can still kind of carry that on and be that person is, it's a lot. I mean, the way you grow up, like, I mean, I'm even learning that through my girlfriend too. Like she's Latina too, and has expressed to me similar to you, like words just come out, or it's like it can be like very toxic at times, especially with family and the way you grow up and even being gay in the first place. It's tough. Yeah,
totally. It's hard. You know, I think I'm thankful because I feel like, and now thinking back, like I think family in general is such a crazy thing, because in reality, there are a lot of family members that I wouldn't be friends with in real life. If they were just someone that I met on the street, I wouldn't like their personality. And so I feel like cutting ties with family is such a taboo topic, but a lot of the times, at least in my case, it was something that I needed to do, you know, it was holding me back a lot of the times.
Right.
Yeah, it was definitely a big blessing in that way. Like we kind of had a conversation. What would our lives look like had we not cut ties with that part of her family and that relationship? And our life would probably look very different. I didn't know at the time that Jay was like, you know, like really, you know, being financially involved with her family. And I think that is something that happens within our culture a lot, where we have to take care of everybody else. And so when you finally decide to like take care of yourself, that does cause some resentment to family members. But I think how is the younger generation expected to thrive and survive if you're constantly having to take care of the older generation? And it's that obligation, and it's that feeling like you have to, and it was never a choice for you when it should be a choice. It's expected of you. And I think that also causes resentment on the other side. So it's a big conversation for sure.
Absolutely. It's almost like you not letting go of like old traditions or something like that.
That's my coming out story in a nutshell.
Yeah. But how did you two meet? Do you remember like what your first impression of each other was?
Yeah, we met on Hinge, like true millennials. And Eden was 45 minutes late to our first date, which I will never forget.
She constantly reminds me, even to the day of our wedding.
Brought it up in the speech, probably.
I did, actually, in a polite
way. With reason, though. Like, with me, she just loves to throw out the first half, but really the second half. And, like, the whole reason why anyone in my position would be late is because if you don't live on the West Side, you will be late by default. So we both did not live on the West Side. We lived both in like North Hollywood area or like Highland Park area. And you decided to have the date on the West Side by the beach because she had another date lined up me. And so I did not know that was the whole reason why we were going to Venice. And by default, like, unless you have a helicopter or a rocket, you are not going to make it there on time.
Like, that is fair. Yeah, I get that. Tell me more about like the first date. Yeah, like what was that like?
This impression, she was pissed because I was late. Yeah.
I was late. I was dating in LA. I was single. I'm like, okay, I might as well just line them up and then just knock it out of the park. That way I don't have to deal with it. Just line them all up on Saturday. And so I did that. And I thought Eden was a catfish because she was like, I'm running late. My bunny sitter is running late.
Because I do have a bunny. There are cat people. There are dog people. There are even chicken people I'm seeing on TikTok. There are bunny people. I am a part of the bunny community. And I've always had a rabbit since I was growing up. And that rabbit I had at the time, I wasn't supposed to. My apartment was like no pets allowed, but I mean, it's not like she makes noise or like anyone's ever going to find out. So I've snuck her into many apartments in LA. And my landlord was just like, by the way, I'm moving your inspection up a week. So I'm going to need you to like have your apartment ready. I'm going to go look through it while we were on our date. And I was like, fuck, okay, what am I going to do? I have a go-to friend who knows how to handle rabbits and is like my bunny sitter. So she was running late, therefore I was running late, therefore I got to this date like 45 minutes because I'm on the other side of town. I just told her the truth. I was like, my bunny sitter is running. I kept giving her live text messages all the way up until.
Yeah. And Jay's like, yeah, right. What do you mean bunny sitter?
Exactly. She's like, my bunny sitter is running late. I'm going to be like 30 minutes late. And I would, at that point, I swore she was a catfish. Yeah. I was like, there's no way. She's definitely a catfish. Who has a bunny in LA? Like, that's so weird. Well, and now that I know you, now that I know like the bunny community, I totally see it. But at the time, I was like, there's no way. So I was live texting my best friend and I was telling her, hey, like, I think I'm just going to bounce. I don't think this girl's real. Like, she's talking about a bunny and she's like 30 minutes late. And I have another date to go to. Like, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm going to skip it.
I actually called my best friend and I was like crying because I was running late and I don't know what it was. And I've never taken like just for even my own, like I have been even more late to dates than 45 minutes.
Wild.
Just because I don't think I was in the right headspace to date. So instead of like tapping out like a normal person should or like a decent human being should, I was still going through it. So I wasn't in the right headspace to date, but for whatever reason, like before I even saw her or met her, I was so excited about this date and I was so nervous about it and I was so sad that I was late. And I was telling my best friend who was a Cancer, and you know, if you If you want to hear something good, don't call up the cancer. Like, they will just tell you how it is. And
straight up.
Like, I don't think she's ever going to talk to me again. She's like, she's probably not. You're wasting your time. You should just turn around. And I'm like, but like, I have to see this through. And she's like, well, she's not going to talk to you. I don't know what you want to talk. Why did you call me for? Like, it's not going to be good news. And then, so I just like hung up the phone and cried and then finally got to see you.
Yeah,
you
were so not happy. I stayed only because my best friend at the time was like, you should just wait it out. Like, just
she
wait it out.
She had another date after me. That's why she stayed. You were still there. She's so funny. It wasn't like the best restaurant either because they wouldn't seat you until your whole party was there. So she had to like wait outside on the street.
Yeah, even worse, right? So that was even a bigger reason why I wanted to dip because I couldn't even a drink. I can
yeah, like grab a drink and chill.
No, it was like on the curb outside for 45 minutes.
So I'm like running up in my little heels and I'm just like, I'm coming. And she looks so pretty. Like, aww. She is just everything that like her pictures were, but like her pictures didn't do her justice. And she just oozes this like coolness and like mysteriousness and sexiness, but also I am pissed. Duh. I don't even know her yet and I have a feeling like she's mad because it's like very quick one-word answers, and so I'm like, all right, let's just get to the table, let me just get us some alcohol and then like hopefully this will like blow over a little bit,
right?
And the waiter literally sassafras was like, oh, so you do exist, because I was starting to think that you weren't even real either. And I was like, okay, 2v1.
Yeah, totally. I was venting to him and he's like, oh, that sucks. Why would she stand you up? Like,
I didn't say what I meant.
So he definitely had to find his 2 cents real quick.
Yeah. He was not on my team at that point. But we got there and I think that was kind of the biggest like blessing in disguise because I felt like I had nothing to lose on that date because she was never going to talk to me again. She was never going to give me a second
chance. So you're like, you know what? Let's just like make the most of this night. It's pretty much like a no.
It's more of like a, I have nothing else to lose. Like, so don't worry about putting on your best front. Don't worry about like, you know, saying all the best parts of myself. I'm just going to say the honest parts of myself. And so we just kind of went in with very deep and like real questions very quickly. Like the first one she even asked was just like, why are you single? And I thought that was like a very fair question. And I told her like, I had just lost my mom to cancer like 4 months ago. I don't feel like I'm in a good space to, you know, find someone because when she died, she took half of my heart with her. And I don't feel like anybody can love somebody with only half a heart. And that's how I truly feel right now. And it was just like, all cards on the table, whatever you want to know, I'm not hiding anything. And and we were just having very, very raw, honest conversations. Like I talked to her about her relationship with her mom and her family and like what are goals that she has in life. And maybe it was like, you know, just getting to it, right? Just getting to like really know somebody on not a superficial level, like not what's your favorite color, what's your favorite food, but what really makes you who you are. And like hours had gone by and we hadn't touched a single part of the food, which we also learned that this restaurant was like family style. So we ordered like a salad and a pasta and a couple other things, but they were like for feeding a family. So we had a table where we could have fed a village. And I like hate wasting food. Like I just feel like there's so many hungry people out there. And I just was so nervous. I couldn't eat either. We did kill a whole bottle. We killed like maybe 2 of them.
The wine was flowing. That's okay.
The wine was flowing and the conversations were flowing and that's all that mattered. But yeah, aww. At the end of the day, it was funny because I kept going to the restroom to text the other date. Remember? Because I have another date. And I was like, hey, so sorry. Like I'm running late. I'll get there in like an hour.
You should have used it. Your bunny sitter is running late.
Honestly, yes.
Yeah, and she was like, yeah, no worries, like my friends just got here because it was a second date with that person and okay. It was like a friend. Yeah, so I was like, oh, I'll be there in like an hour, because thinking that the date was going to end there, right? Because we were already done with the line. And Eden goes, oh, do you want to go find someone to give the food to? We should pack it up and go. And like my heart just sank because like I at the time I was volunteering at like homeless shelters and like, I've always been down to feed the homeless and just help those that need help. And yeah. So when she said that, I was just like, oh no, she's pulling at my heartstrings.
Yeah, you're so like,
do not let this date end, because the moment she does, she's going to like realize that she's mad at me and that she's not going to talk to me again. So my thought process like was just keep it going. So I was like, let's go feed the homeless person now. Let's go like sit on the beach and watch a sunset. Now let's go watch a movie.
Yeah.
And then after the movie, I'm like running out of things, because now it's coming to the end of the night and I'm like,
granted, by the third request I just like texted my second date and I was like, I'm so sorry, I'm
like, I can't make it,
I'm so sorry, she's so mad. Rightfully so. But yeah, and then you ended up asking me to the movies that night, and we went to the movies
and we saw Lion King, because that was like the only thing I could quickly search very fast, like, yes. what was playing.
The Beyonce Lion King.
It was the Beyonce Lion King. So after, you know, it's not like we don't know how this ends, right? So we're sitting there, nobody like makes a move, nobody crosses arms over, nobody tries to like yawn, and like we were just sitting like we were in an airplane. Yeah. Like nobody even like did to like put their arm on the armrest. Like it was just straightforward and didn't share popcorn, nothing. And so I'm thinking like, maybe this girl still is really mad at me. And
I was just a shy Pisces, that's all.
I get that. Like, nerves can, like, make you shut down, too. I actually really get that.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know she was nervous and she's mad.
Yeah, I was nervous.
And then, like, Simba becomes king, the credits roll, and I'm like, I am running out of things. And so I'm trying to, like, think really quickly as we're, like, walking to say goodbye, because I'm determined, like, to not say goodbye. And so she was like, you know.
Granted, our date started at, like, 3, and it's 10 p.m. now.
Oh!
Yeah. We were going. And then so I was like, she asked me random questions. So I was like, oh, what do you have planned for the rest of the night or like the week or something? I was like, oh, well, I'm switching apartments in my apartment and I have to move. And politely, she was just like, oh, like I could help you pack if you ever need help. Aww. And I was like, great, I can help right now. Like, actually, like, I need help tonight. If you want to help you pack right now, like I could really use the help. If you really mean what you say. And then she was like, okay, like, I'll help you pack your apartment.
I guess I'll come over and help you pack.
Oh my God. I love this.
I like rushed over. I got like another bottle of wine. I got Taco Bell because we hadn't eaten all day. Yeah. And I'm like starving. I love Taco Bell. It's such
like.
It's
crazy because I love Taco Bell. It's my favorite like fast food guilty pleasure. So when she said
so good.
This girl can't be any more perfect.
Like, yeah.
Wild. And we're still on our first date today.
It never ended.
No, I never let it stop, because the moment I do, like, she's gonna realize
you're ridiculous.
Matt, and I am so mad at you for being late.
You're still waiting for that moment to like let it set in for Jay. We're gonna sign off this pod interview and Jay's gonna be like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
actually mad.
Still mad at you.
I'm actually mad. What am I doing here? Now she's gonna come to her senses. So I gotta keep it going. What's that? There's like a story. It's like something about the thousand nights. I feel like I'm her. I just like keep the night going. I just keep the story going.
That's so funny. I feel like that's every classic like gay date. You know what I mean? Like it lasts a long time when you really connect with someone. You like don't want it to end.
No, never. It's, yeah, so typical millennial queer date.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, diving into this and, like, kind of stereotypes, there are a lot of stereotypes in queer relationships, like U-hauling. There's also gender roles when, I don't know if you two have gotten this, but, like, who is the man in the relationship? Also, like, lesbian bed death, which is, like, dry spells when you go through periods of that. Why do you think queer relationships, like, have those stereotypes?
Well, no, each stereotype, I think, stems from something, right? Like, some, like, within every, I don't know, fairy tale, there is, like, some truth to it, or, like, the story had to come from something, and I don't, just depends on, you know, how you believe in it, and making it a negative thing. Like, we U-hauled, I don't see that as a negative thing.
1,000%. We literally moved in 6 months after knowing each other, and we got married a year in. Like, we eloped a year in, and we moved in together 6 months after knowing each other.
Granted, our first date, I just got the keys to my new apartment, so I had to break lease, like, just a few months in.
Yeah.
And so, like, we completely U-hauled, and I mean, it just didn't...
I will say, like, I don't I don't know, to your point, I don't see a negative in that, because I feel like U-hauling isn't really a bad thing, because it just means that you're asking all the, like, you're doing all the serious things up front versus prolonging it through the years.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We go back, like, we just did this post on social media where we summed up kind of the last 4 years of our relationship, and we, like, that was a part of our story. Like, we obviously, we had a first date, and like, we U-hauled, we went through the pandemic together, we were able to do IVF and start a movement and, you know, do social media. There's like so many different things that we've done, but I think we were able to do so many different things because we knew like this was it, and we moved quickly. Had we had waited, I don't know, 2 or 3 years to move in, or a year, whatever the minimum is that society puts on you to do all of these things, now we have to date 2 more years, and now we have to get married in another year, now we have to like have our marriage for a year and then think about kids. Like, whose timelines are these? Like, and it's just whatever feels right to you. And sometimes I think as women, like, we want to get to it. And then I don't think U-hauling is necessarily a bad thing. You can decide whether you're into it or not fairly quickly, and then make an educated decision based off of that.
And like, I think you hit the nail in the coffin. I think that's what makes U-hauling, or puts the negative connotation on U-hauling, is that people don't take the time to actually see if that person is the right person to move in with or take it to the next level. There's a lot of like just jumping the gun before even asking those really serious questions up front.
Mm-hmm. I was in a group of lesbians. I was a one bisexual in this group of lesbians, and all of them were telling me, don't move in with her, because I had a really sick apartment. I had like a 2-story, 2-bedroom, 3-bathroom loft for like 1600, and
that's,
they're
like, unheard of.
Unheard of. They're like, you're never gonna, I mean, granted, that's, that was amazing, kind of like, yeah, they're like, don't let that go, you're never gonna find another apartment. But I was just like, yeah, but I'm never gonna find another girl like her either, so if I'm gonna choose between the two, I'm gonna choose her. And it was interesting to hear like that, you know, don't be a U-Haul, don't be a stereotype, don't be this. And I just was doing what felt right to me. But had I listened to everybody else tell me that U-hauling was wrong, or that it's a bad thing, or that it's a cliche stereotype, we wouldn't be as far as we are now, because we're doing what everybody else tells us to do, which is to wait. Like, if you want to just get to it and figure out if you like this or not, just go, just like try it out. And
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Cause like, I love that, but like exactly with U-hauling, like, why does society have a say in that to be like, you need to date for like this amount of time before you move in together? Like, you learn so much about each other in that time. And like you said, you kind of make that call. Like, no one's like locking you into that. Like, you can make the decision, like, does this work for me or does it not?
Yeah. And I don't know, I find it funny, especially when people ask like, who's the man in the relationship? It's like, neither. We both come. That's the problem. That's why we're together. Like, there's no one needs a man. No one needs to be the man.
It's these like gender norms and these like gender like stereotypes, right? Like, I there is no man that is the point, and I don't think anybody needs to be the man. Like, we both carry our weight in completely different ways, and in ways that you may not expect. Like, I love to fix and build things, and I'm like, I present, I guess, in the most feminine, girliest way possible, but anything that breaks, I'm like on the roof and I'm fixing things. I'm like reading manuals. I will read a manual front to back and like rebuild something and take it apart. Like, that's IKEA. That's my jam. Like, I love to like do those things. And Jay is like, again, she's like more in the kitchen and loves to cook. And then
I'm like fully tatted. Everybody assumes that I'm like the super like I'm like, no, I'm the soft one.
She makes me so much softer. And I love that about her. We're so opposites in that way. And if I didn't have somebody who was as opposite as me, I wouldn't be the person I am today. And like vice versa, I think I bring the toughness out of her. I push her in those different types of ways that she's probably never been pushed before. And yeah, we bring a lot of balance, but there's no man, and you don't need a man to have that type of balance, you know.
Absolutely not. Yeah, that's just like a classic society again for you, right?
Yeah, because I think it's like needed. Like, I can open a spaghetti jar. Like, don't. I mean, it's all about working smarter, not harder, too. Like, just stab the tops and, you know, just we'll figure it out.
Or those like little grip things. Like, have you ever used one of those? I could never for the life of me open up any jars. And now with that little grip, like get them at like a Dollarama. Yes. Oh, like game changer. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Like otherwise I was like, I'm gonna like smash this jar. Like, I don't know what else to do. What am I gonna do?
The stereotype is like you need a man. And I think we've proven like within like a society and our relationships that you don't need it. Like we will all survive. We can all build shit and like figure it out on our own. Doesn't matter what you look like. Like, if, you know, if you want to do it, you'll do it, figure it out.
Exactly. And do you guys know anything about like lesbian bed death? Like, I don't know if that's like a super common stereotype, but I've heard it like a little bit.
Yeah, no, it, from what I know is that it, you've been in a long-term relationship and then you stop having sex. Like it's kind of like just, or it's decreased a lot. And I can see where that would happen in most queer relationships. Yeah. People get comfortable. Right. No one's really trying anymore. And I think that has a lot to do with dating your partner too. Like we're adamant about wooing each other even after being married, you know? And I think people have this misperception that you need to stop dating your partner once you're in a committed relationship. And that's just not true. You know, it's almost like owning a car and taking it to get fixed. Like the car needs to have an oil change every so often. And I think that in order for that car to run, it's the same thing with a relationship. In order for that relationship to be healthy and have a, you know, a healthy like sexual
love life, intimacy, like depending on, I mean, there are always different cases, right? You have like high libidos, you have low libidos. We have opposite libidos, but we still find ways to make it work. I do feel like it's an unfair, I think, lesbian bed death like analogy to use, because I think that's just normal within any relationship. Because when you're dating, it's just you're not dealing with the stressors of having to provide for your partner. Like you haven't merged all the things, the bills, the responsibilities, the like life pressures. Like those haven't kicked in yet, but once you live life and you're building a life together, the priority is like survival. It is paying bills. It is like reaching these goals, and a lot of your priorities and how you use your time like switches. And I don't think that's unfair. I don't think that is like the end all be all that you stop loving or you stop wanting your person. I think it's just having open communication about intimacy and what you need, and that is huge and that is key, especially if somebody needs it more than the other person. And you don't want to, not to say that that leads to infidelity, but you don't want your partner to feel neglected. And I think that is the biggest misconception, is that I don't like saying lesbian dead bed death, because it's just like when you stop having like sex and when you stop being intimate, like it can make somebody feel like lonely or neglected. That is a reality. Every cause of action has a reaction. But if you have communication about like what each other needs and how you can meet in the middle, and you're not going to hit it every single time, but as long as you're trying, like Jay was saying, as long as you're constantly checking in and checking that oil and checking with your partner and vice versa, it's like you're both are trying to keep this thing alive and keep it moving forward. Yeah. But it's just also having an understanding of what the expectation is for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I was going to point out too, one thing I love about your guys' social media is how you really like promote healthy queer relationships and like healthy communication. And we just wanted to know, what are three things every listener can do to help like nurture a healthier relationship with their partner?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things is creating safe space. When we first started dating, my communication skills were so low, like on the floor, I would shut down often. Like I didn't know how to, you know, articulate how I was feeling in a positive or healthy way. And Eden and I created safe space. So Eden basically said, like, you know, this couch is safe space, meaning like if you need to say anything, whether it's good or bad or like whatever, just get it out on this couch without any kind of repercussion. Because as we mentioned earlier, I was raised in like a really toxic, traumatic environment where it was like yelling 24/7 and just like, so it was hard for me to just have a normal conversation when something would upset me. Mm-hmm. And creating that safe space, I feel really helped my communication skills. And unlearning, like helped me unlearn a lot of trauma in the way that I felt safe. Like for once I was able to just speak my mind without having to lie or, you know, minimize what I'm trying to say to not hurt her feelings, but just be.
I think the biggest misconception about having it, or the hardest part about having safe space and open communication, is allowing your partner to be honest without judging them, without getting mad, because that's what causes the lies. That's what causes the people pleasing. That's what causes the walking on eggshells, because they don't feel like they can tell you the truth. And what we always tell our listeners is don't be mad for your partner being honest, because that's what causes like all this other, you know, resentment and back-ended. So as long as they're honest, whatever that truth may be, appreciate the honesty first and foremost, and then deal with whatever comes after that. But you have to come from a place of love and not a place of like anger or resentment or your own trauma, because it's not going to give whatever the problem is a fair fight to find an like a healthy solution to it. And I think once we realize, like, not only do we have to create safe space, like, and this is going to be an uphill battle, this is going to be a lot of work, because we both have things that, you know, trigger us and that we're working on in our communication, we need to at least give each other a place to be honest, because if we can't be honest with each other, then I don't know what we're doing. Like that's the bare minimum that we both need is honesty. And that's what's going to really open up the rest of like the foundation for communication. Because if your partner can be honest with you, then we can like work on everything else after that. Like that is our baseline. It's honesty. Good. Let's start and like feel safe and, you know, and work with it. I think the second biggest thing that we always tell our listeners is that understanding your person's love language and communication style, those are two completely different things. And do not put the pressure of your partner knowing your love language and understanding your communication style as something that's second nature to them, because they have their own. And so it's really just remembering, like, they don't think the way that I do. They don't love the way that I do. They don't communicate the way that I do. Because we're both speaking two separate different languages and we're trying to communicate something together. So giving each other patience and understanding, like, if you're not sure, don't assume. Like, if you hear something that set you off, it's better to ask and say, like, hey, did you mean it that way? And it can completely be different. Like, we have two different styles. We have two different ways of talking in tones where I think that she might be upset about something. And she was just like, no, I was just saying what it was. Like, it was just that. And it's like really rechecking ourselves and putting it back on us before we start pointing the finger at our partner.
Like, yeah. Cause it can be easy to do that. That's almost like a defense mechanism.
So easy to be like, well, you said that. No, what it is like what I heard was blank. It's really reframing it back and putting it on yourself first and giving your partner the option to like either explain or confirm, like, oh, they really are upset. Now you're opening the floor to be like, okay, well, why are you upset? Like what is happening? What is going on? It's that it's really putting it on yourself first before you dump something on your partner, because most of the time it's you're dumping your own stuff onto them. And it's this communication dance, again, is not easy, but it's also understanding, like, she's coming from a different place than I am. I'm coming from a different place than she is, and giving each other grace and space to like be able to still be ourselves and communicate the way that we're going to do. Because if I try to force her to communicate like me, it's not going to end well. It's not going to get us very far, and vice versa. So just once you accept that and just learn how to communicate with your person in their way, I think makes it a lot easier for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like we project a lot on, like, projection is really huge. Like kind of taking our own personal like triggers and just like dumping that. And yeah, I've been guilty of that too. And I'll tell my partner later, I'm like, I was truly projecting. Exactly like you said, it's not like what you said, it's how I heard it. And that's like my own shit, like I need to work on, you know?
Yeah, but at least you're acknowledging it. Like, you're on the right step, you know? It's on you.
Yeah.
It's your partner.
big thing that she's had to teach me is how to say sorry.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I'm not the biggest person. That's not, like, my favorite thing to do. It's, like, yeah. Say sorry. I would rather just, like, fix the problem and then rather than just be like I'm sorry, because now I feel like we're backtracking and all those things. But it's needed.
Yeah.
Just because I don't feel like I need it doesn't mean that she doesn't need it. And so she needs an acknowledgement of, like, what had happened and what went wrong and what I did wrong. So, like, saying sorry was really big for me. And I think I struggled with, like, why do I struggle saying sorry? Why am I holding all of my sorries? Like, I have only this limited amount in the bank. And if I give one out, I'm, like, one short. Like, it's just, I'm going to run out of them someday. So I'm, like, literally, I'm holding my sorries for when I really, like, need them.
Yeah.
No, I have an unlimited amount of sorries to give out. So just start handing them out whenever they're needed and like understand what it means to be sorry and like figuring out like that is something that is a part of life and learning and making mistakes and being sorry for when you make a mistake or if I've, you know, made her upset in some type of way. And that I think is like third for us is just acknowledgement and apologizing.
Yeah.
Like, don't hold your sorries, don't hold like all of this in, just acknowledge it. And I think, like, heal.
Just to add to that sorry, I think there's a difference between just saying sorry and like saying what you're sorry for. Mm-hmm. And how you're gonna change. Like I think a sorry has three different steps, and mm-hmm. a lot of people just say sorry and expect that to be enough, but there should be acknowledgement.
It's not enough.
And there should be like a game plan for it. To not or work on that thing that you're sorry for.
You know? Like the so action that comes with it.
Yeah. Like I need the whole give me the whole play by play.
It's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for doing this and I will be doing this better in the future. It's just like this whole circle. That is an actual apology and not like, I'm sorry. Let it be. I'll say sorry when I do it again. Like, no, it's like, I acknowledge what I did wrong and I'm going to do better next time.
Work. Definitely. Aw, I feel like I'm in a little like therapy session right now. Like,
welcome.
I'm like taking notes. Well, I was like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, sorry, working on that.
Exactly. Accountability. No, this is actually great. And I was going to say this kind of like, you already answered this pretty much, but how do you like, what do you feel is the best way to approach conflict? I think you guys pretty much like summed it up, but if you find yourself in that situation, what would you do?
I think just like conflict for us, it's all about creating the space to have it. You know, we have a rule, which we've had since day one. I'm not a fan of cussing and I don't like my partners cussing at me. Like, it's just not what it's what I grew up in and it's not what I want to continue to have in my life. And so for us, it's very important that even in our most heated arguments, like there is no name calling of each other, you know, there's no calling each other out of our names. You can be upset and you can be angry, but I think there's a healthy way to do that.
Yeah.
And so it's like setting those ground rules.
I feel like the best way we could break it down for people, if y'all are going to argue, because it will happen. Yeah, it happens to everybody. Like that Absolutely. Is a part of life. You need to be like having something with your partner, mm-hmm. just like. You're two different human beings, right? So I think just one, I love where Jay's coming from. I think our biggest one that we also use is, I'm going to fight for this. I'm not going to fight against it. So at the end of the day, we have to be in this together and finding a solution together. So like, let's just put the even playing field out. We're both going to have to give up something and we're both going to gain something from this. And we're going to work through it together, because it's not me versus you. It's not I'm right, you're wrong. It's not who wins or loses, because then that creates this like different power dynamic between the relationship and like how you argue. Because at the end of the day, like, are you arguing to argue to make somebody feel less than? Because that's not the reason to argue. You shouldn't be like, you made me feel bad, so I need to make you feel worse. Like, that's just not healthy. That's just not what we do. But I will say, if you're going to have a conflict, there is a problem that needs a solution. Now, what we've learned is that not every conflict that has a problem needs a solution. I am a person that needs to solve a problem. I am a fixer through and through. I will build stuff. I like crossing things off lists and being done with them. Jay sometimes doesn't need a problem to be fixed. She just needs to be heard.
Mm.
That doesn't make sense to me, but it's not for it to make sense to me. She's like, I need to complain about something. I have this problem and she needs to get it off her chest and like, just like, you know, have some type of like discussion that's like, you know, about this thing that's bothered her. And my initial thing is like, well, I need to fix it. Sometimes that's not it. That's not what she needs. So what we've learned, like when it comes to conflict, what helps at least my brain is like, okay, do you need me to fix it or do you need to be heard? And then she can tell me like, I need you to help me fix this. Like, we need to fix it. This is a problem. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's like, I just need you to listen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the hardest part for me. Like,
it doesn't come natural
because in the back of my mind, I'm like, I want to fix it. Yeah. But it's not, every problem is for me to fix. Like yeah. sometimes she needs things on her own and she wants to. And sometimes she just wants somebody to hear her out. And like, as she's figuring out how to fix it on her own. So it's also being loving and supporting your partner and knowing how to love and support them and how they need it, not necessarily how they want it. It's like, how do they need it? And sometimes she just needs to go through it on her own. Sometimes she tells me she like wants to learn the hard way. Like, and that's fine because she knows I'm a fixer. And if I fix every problem for her, then she doesn't learn like the way that she wants to.
Yeah.
So we've like figure out that dynamic with each other. But when it comes to conflict, like you got to figure it out. You're in it together. It's like, you're both are in a boxing ring. You're just going to beat each other up until it's done. It's like, no, like you both got to put down the gloves, acknowledge that you're in a ring and like talk it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause like you said, it's inevitable. Like if there's mm-hmm. not conflict, like obviously there's something missing, right? Like you're two different people, like in something together on this journey together. And yeah, it's just how you deal with it and understand each other. So that's really good advice, honestly. I wanted to get into marriage and children with you guys, as you did just get married and you are on this like IVF journey. But I wanted to know, when was the moment you both realized you wanted to marry each other?
Yeah, great question. I think I realized I wanted to marry Eden on our fourth date. We were in handcuffs and I realized she was the one.
That's a yeah, really great way to start that. I love it.
I you know, it's funny because I was joking. I was like, okay, universe, like the next person you throw into my life better be a ride or die. Like I want somebody to be in it with me that can like go through the waves, because like when you lose somebody that you love, you realize how hard and intense life can be. And I had just gotten out of a relationship at that time. And it really was such like a lonely and hard experience to go through by myself. And my, you know, ex just didn't want any part in that journey with me. So I was like, I need somebody, no matter how hard it gets, they're not going to like get scared and they're not going to let life like have them run away. And so I just thought it was very ironic because it's like one of those be careful what you wish for things. Because like once you're in handcuffs and the police officer is like saying you can go, she's going to jail, and she's like, oh, I'm going with her, like aww. I'm gonna ride with her. And it was our fourth date where she didn't really need to like owe me anything. Like she could have just like been like, you know what, this is a lie, I'm gonna only our fourth date.
That was also the first night she told me she loved me too.
I did.
I told you I loved you right before the handcuff.
This was before the handcuff situation. I was like, if you want to take it back, it's okay. It's fine. I won't hold it against you. But no, she yeah. still meant it. And I think for me, it was, I put it in our vows. It was our second date. And like, it was crazy because like, we share so much of our lives online. And the reason like really why I was like holding on to that story was because I knew I wanted to marry her and I wanted to, like, it was really cool to have that memory in my phone that saved that date and that timestamp of when I was just like, I want to marry this girl. And I wanted to, like, I didn't know when that would be. I just knew like that was it for me. And that was like that moment on our second date. And I was able to share that on our wedding day, and it was just like, it was worth the wait. And I know a lot of our followers would be like, I want to hear the second date and the third date. And I'm like, no, like I'm holding on to that. And to like, I couldn't really like make it too big of a deal because she would be like, why don't we talk about our second date? And I'm just like, why don't we talk about any other day?
Want to like hold it special to you, right? You know, yeah, like cherish that.
Yeah, so it was really cool to be able to do that for her and to like see that all the way through. I'm very much like, Jay lives in the now and I live in the future, and that's also something that we're complete opposites. Like I'm 8 steps ahead and she's just like, yeah, I'm just enjoying what's happening on step 1. But she does ground me to like be more present because yeah. I'm always like,
okay, you're always on the go.
Always on the go, like what's happening next, 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 next. And so for me, I played the long game. I was like, I wanted to save this for whenever that day would be. So I saw it like for a future. I don't know when, I don't know how, but it was really nice to see that work out.
Yeah, no, that's sweet. What has been the biggest surprise and the greatest challenge in planning a queer wedding?
So we knew we wanted to have like a very traditional Catholic wedding as a queer couple. And that like in itself is pretty complicated because we can't legally get married in a Catholic church because we're gay. So mm-hmm. it's like this catch-22. But we knew we wanted to do a calenda, mm-hmm. which in Mexican culture, when you get married or have a baptism or it's like your quinceañera or whatever, like any big accomplishments, straight weddings, they have these like city marches where the entire city comes out and they celebrate like whatever it is that you've accomplished. And there's like dancers and it's a giant parade. It's insane.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to do that for our wedding. And when we searched online or on TikTok, like, okay, lesbian calenda or like queer calenda, nothing came up, like not one wow. video. Yeah. So we were like, okay, this is what we want. And this can be,
how's this gonna go?
Yeah, like, yeah. It could be a little troubling because you don't know. I mean, granted, Mexico is pretty advanced. Like they have gay rights. They believe in women's rights. They're pretty ahead of their time, but nobody had ever done it before. So that was one of the things that we were kind of dreading in the back of our heads because it could go one of two ways, right? Yeah. One, the whole city can just embrace it and it can be this magical thing. Or two, you can have a bunch of homophobic people that join the march and, you know,
are upset that we're like, you know,
messing
displaying our love. Like, because we, the God on that tradition, like, you go all the way to the church. Like, that is what it is. Like, we can't pick a different route. And it was, you know, something that we warned our, like, bridal party or, like, everybody, all of our guests that were coming, like, hey, we're going to do this thing. Like, if you're planning on attending our wedding, please know, like, this could be a possibility. Because we have no data. Like, I'm all about data and numbers. Like, I have nothing to pull reference from. And I think that to me gave me the most anxiety. And to like, it goes back to like how we first talked about representation, how much it matters. As soon as you've seen it done before, it gives you a little bit of peace of mind and knowing that it's possible. So mm-hmm. I think not having that reference to like pull from really just made it like, we're going to do this thing and we don't know 100% if it's going to be embraced or if it's people are going to attack us or be upset, but we're going to do it anyways. And it's not just for us. It's for everybody after us. Cause I would hate for somebody to feel that way. Like
yeah.
to look for something that Google is saying, like, it's not here. Like people who look like doesn't exist. Like, why are you even searching this thing? You know, because it's not for you. And so we were like, our wedding is so much bigger than us and it's bigger than just her and I. And we wanted to let other people know, like, if this was something that you wanted and that you, you know, want in your journey and in your love story, you can have it. Cause if we can do it, you can do it.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that, beautiful.
That was one of the things that was a little complicated, but it turned out to be amazing,
but it was incredible. It was my favorite part.
Honestly, like seeing so many, 99% of our family and friends were queer. So just seeing so many queer people in the streets dancing and, you know, with their partners and just embracing aww. The culture, insane.
Queer, trans, like non-binary, everybody in between. Like it was like, it felt like our own little pride march through like Oaxaca. And it was so cool to see everybody be so supportive. It was like a pleasant surprise to see how embraced we were. And the fact that we were both wearing dresses too, because I think maybe it could have been easier if she was wearing a suit and maybe it would have helped people's brains a little bit. But we were like, we both want to wear dresses. This is our thing. And it was embraced. And our whole bridal party and like our whole family got to be a part of it and be a part of this culture and make these incredible memories. So that was, I think, like,
and I think key. That, yeah, that's one. And the second thing for us with planning our queer wedding is that we're such perfectionists. And I think that is like plays a big role in it because we've been throwing, you know, queer events, Preciosa Nights, like for the last year,
right.
that we can catch things. Like we're very quick on details. And so our wedding was nothing different. We were like, we want this at this time. We want these colors. This has to look a certain way.
It felt like a Preciosa on steroids that was like very bougie. And And granted, the Preciosa that we had right before that, we threw a festival. We threw our very first queer festival. It was free to the public.
It's amazing.
We had performers that performed at Coachella. We had artists, and at least one person from every performer was queer. So we had an all queer lineup that were also
all DJs were queer.
The DJs were all queer. They were all Latina, and it was just an incredible, magical moment. And we did that July 1st, and then we got married July 29th. So we just came off of planning this 10,000 person event, just the
That's
two
insane.
Of us. Yeah,
it was at Pershing Square. It was nuts.
And it was free. It was free for everybody. And we did that. And just to look back and be okay, now we have to plan our wedding. Now we have to figure out our wedding. We didn't have dresses at the time. We just made it all work. And, well, that's the thing. We give so much of ourselves for our community, but we don't brag about it. We're not hey, this is, people saw a beautiful wedding, but they have no idea what it meant to us and why we did the things that we did. It wasn't for clout. It wasn't for followers. It wasn't for anything. It was because we wanted to show people, we don't want people to feel the way that we feel. We want to create these spaces. We want to make a difference. What's the point of being an influencer if you don't have something positive and impactful to influence? I'd rather lose it all if I'm not going to make a difference in this world. And that's, we didn't start social media to be followed. We started it to make a difference and to make a difference for people who are brown, not just Latina, people who are brown, black and mixed colors. Even if you're light skinned, if you're white, whatever, if you just feel you can relate to our story in some type of way, we welcome all walks of life, and you'd be pleasantly surprised of how many people kind of yourself have no idea the things that we do all the time and how much we try to give back to the community. And we sometimes don't even take a step back because I'm always thinking forward. And Jay's we have to really understand that we just did this thing. And I'm yeah, but what about the next thing?
Sit in the moment and just enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Constantly a reminder. But yeah, I think that those were the most
I think it was challenging,
crazy intense times.
Crazy intense times for the wedding. But everything I think went off without a hitch. I think the most surprised that I was the tattoo artist that we kind of brought in last minute.
Yeah.
I did not think that was going to be the most popular thing at our wedding. I was like, maybe
the people were just getting tattoos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So probably 2 weeks before the wedding, I was talking to Eden, and I asked if we should have a tattoo artist. I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm fully tatted. We have friends that are tatted. It would be really cool, and I really haven't seen it at weddings, if we had a tattoo artist. We created the flash art beforehand. So cool. We were having a conversation with the tattoo artist, and she's like, how many people do you think would get tatted at your wedding? Mm-hmm. Mind you, we had 80 guests at our wedding. It was pretty intimate. And I was thinking to myself, okay, well, I'm probably going to get some. Eden, maybe, a couple friends. I'm like, okay, 30. I'm comfortable with saying 30 people. And if we don't,
we thought 12.
Yeah.
At the top of our, we were 12 for sure would get it.
Like,
and then the other,
maybe, depending. If they're in the mood and it's a great party, maybe. And I was worst case scenario, I'll just get the remainder. Mm-hmm. I don't mind,
I was you're going to get 15 sleeves.
I'm down.
Just add it.
Just add it to the roster.
Yeah. I'm making the flash. So I'll just make sure it's stuff that I want.
And they were all super cute.
Super cute. And day of the wedding, we get there, and the tattoo artist comes to us, and she's like, I have a waiting list of 40 people, and I had to cut it off because I think I could have gone to 60. What do you want to do? And I'm like, damn, I did not think it was going to be that popular. And we're like, just go until 40. It's fine.
She did not stop. She was there from the doors opening to the doors closing, giving out tattoos. Everyone was. And I think what it was, because we asked, because there was a lot of first timers. People got their first tattoo.
That's great. We're okay, let's just do it.
That's why we were we weren't counting for you. We thought the tattooed people would get the tattoos. And the tias, tias from Mexico, were getting tatted for their first tattoo. I was like, tia, what's happening? But what it was? And we asked, they were like, this wedding and this trip was so memorable. They wanted something forever to always look back and remember this crazy journey. Cause our wedding was 3 days. We had a whole 3-day adventure planned for everybody, and they just never wanted to forget it. So a tattoo was a no brainer for them. And I was like, oh,
mind blown. Okay. Not what we thought was going to be.
I made you guys custom mezcal bottles from scratch, where I had to go pull the horse. I picked the mezcal. We went to this town with no name. We found this guy. all of these things. I thought that was going to be the popular thing, the like custom mezcal that
like I want tats.
Yeah, it was tattoos. I was like, okay, cool. Mm. Not the free tacos, not the the fireworks. No, it was the tattoos.
That's awesome. But I get that. People want to like remember that experience too. And like you said, it was like a 3-day event. That's memorable already. So you want to like commemorate that.
Yeah. Everyone was incredible. And I think had an amazing moment. That list that we picked was so like very, there wasn't one person there that we didn't want. And
that's another thing. Actually, with weddings, we realized, because we kept going back and forth. Like, I feel like when it comes to weddings, you're kind of forced to invite the people that you kind of inherited over the years, or like mm-hmm. friends of a friend, or maybe a family friend who you don't really talk to, maybe your mom talks to, or like is somewhat acquainted with mm-hmm. out of obligation, because that's like what you're supposed to do. And when we sat down and did our list, we both agreed we only wanted people that 100% supported our love, 100% were there for us, were amazing friends, and we only had like the best things to say about them, because we didn't want any dead weight. And we didn't want to feel weird, awkward on our day, you know? Mm-hmm. We wanted to feel as comfortable as possible.
Yeah. And everyone was that. Like, I think there were people that, you know, were invited that got weeded out within the process, but then that was a growing process for us. And it taught us to let go. It taught us to let go of some people that weren't worth holding on to. And if you're not willing to show up for us on the most important day of our lives, then there's no space for you in this circle. And I think as we start to as we're in that baby journey, and like mm-hmm. that circle should be even stronger, because these are our, you know, kids that you're going to be around, and all of those things, like the wedding kind of helped naturally ease out, I guess, like weed out that process and do a friend's cleanse, if you will.
Absolutely. Energy is so important in who you surround yourself with and who you're like bringing into your life in that way, especially with like a baby in the process. It's very, very important to have that. So yeah, I love that. It's been a lovely conversation. I feel like we could chat for forever.
Honestly, yeah.
It's so fun. So you're in the process of starting a family. What should listeners know about IVF if they're thinking about starting the journey with their partners?
I love this question. Two things. One, I think as females, we don't realize that there's a internal clock that is ticking away.
That's a real thing.
And I think that even if you're thinking about, like, even if you're on the fence about kids, or you're thinking about kids down the line 5-10 years from now, you should get checked immediately. Like, you should go and get your eggs counted. You should go and see where your hormone levels are at, because that's like step one. When we wanted to mm-hmm. have kids, it was like, when we talked about kids, it was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Early in our relationship, like that first U-hauling year, we were like, okay, what is the timeline? What do you want?
And it's 2020, when the whole world shut down, and now you don't have these distractions. And we're like, okay, let's like seriously talk about this. If this is on the table, then let's like figure out where we're at.
Right. Like, and I assumed, like Eden's younger, so I assumed that like Eden mm-hmm. would go first and I would go second. Mm-hmm. And then we went and I got checked and my clock was like, girl, you're late. Like, you need to, you should have had it like yesterday.
Her hormone levels were extremely low, like, and for her age, and she's super young. So we thought we had all this time, because, you know, that's what
no one talks about.
You assume like you're young.
Definitely
you're
don't healthy. Talk about it. Yeah.
And we're like, cool. We're just going to coast through this. We just want to know how many years we have. Mm-hmm. And the doctor was like, you have no years, you have months. So it's either you do this now, or the burden's going to fall on me only, because I'm younger than her. And my hormone levels were where they should be for my age. And you don't know what you're going to get until you get there. And Jay looks like on the outside, just everything looks super healthy. And she's always been a healthy person, never gets sick. I always get sick. And her levels were just, you know, not where they should be. And they really just kind of gave us that, you know, information. And once you have that information, like, that's true. It's power behind it. You can make a decision and make a choice. So we were like, we weren't prepared for this, but now it's like, we gotta, you know, get this thing moving and get it happening.
So I feel like that was step one. Just like getting checked is so important for just females in general. We should mm-hmm. know, even if you don't want to, I feel like it's like a fun thing to just go do and just see like where you land and how much time you have to make that decision if Definitely. You want it.
And there's step two, I think, for us was finding a donor. Mm-hmm. Like that was, because I feel like people think of IVF and they think it's this, and it is expensive, mm-hmm. but I think you see it as like a full ticketed item, right? Like it's just like X amount of money out the door, but you can break it down in sections, which yeah. is what we did, right? We did the testing first, mm-hmm. which our insurance covered, thank God. And then we did the sperm picking because that was like a big chunk. It can be expensive depending on, mm-hmm. you know, who the donor is and what you're looking for.
And I think when you think of like having a baby and doing IVF, right, it's like buying a house. It's like there's only so many people in this world that could afford to do that thing. And, you know, maybe it's not my journey because it seems so expensive or it's super hard or it's like information overload. And that's just why we love talking about this. And why we've talked about it in the past, and now we're going to bring it back up again on our page to remind people it is 100% possible. Like Jay and I aren't like made of money. We work extremely hard for everything that we have and all that we do, and we made it work. And you know what, this is how we did it. We just did it in sections and mm-hmm. you know, breaking it up. Once you have that information, you can like make a plan and plan for how you're going to, again, cross things off the list and, you know, do step one and step two and step three. And for us, step one is just knowing where your levels are. And again, still take that with a grain of salt because my levels were super like amazing for my age. And then once we, you know, we did IVF with Jay, she had to go through two rounds because, you know, it wasn't easy for her and her hormones, and that getting her to like be responsive to the medication was expensive. So we agreed, you know, we had a plan. We were only going to be able to spend this much and like try this many times, and she killed it on the second one. And, you know, we have embryos and that's amazing. But then once it came to my turn to do IVF, we ended up finding out that I had endometriosis. So my ability to be able to pull any eggs or any follicles were like slim to none. And wow. So even though my hormone levels were great and everyone was like, Eden, you're like, you've got time, you're amazing. Like, it's, we're not even thinking about you. We're just going to focus on Jay. I ended up being worse than Jay. And like, whether I was in a straight relationship or a gay relationship, this would still be my outcome because right. of my condition that I had no idea because I didn't check. I didn't check for it. I wasn't thinking about it. And that's, again, like another reason why we're like, check early, because then you can start doing something about it. I think had I had checked 3 years ago, I probably could have started a process yeah. to take medication or to try different treatments to get this under control. But because now we're here and I'm running out of time, my options were to do IVF as well, which I, you know, wasn't a part of the plan because we didn't want to spend that kind of money. But right. we're like, okay, we know how much it costs. We've done this twice. This is how much we need to save up roughly. This is what we're going to do. And this is our plan. So like, it's just about having a plan. And we did this over a stretch of like 3 years. So it wasn't all at once, you know, it wasn't all in one big lump sum. It's like, start asking questions, knowing what it's going to cost and working towards that plan. Mm-hmm. And for us, like, we didn't want to spend more than obviously one round. So I did one round and kind of like whatever we get, that is what we get. And mm-hmm. that's fine with me. And I got one. I got like one embryo, well, one and a half, but like, let's be real. It's one. And then Jay has seven. So wow. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to get egg greedy. Like, we have seven plenty, you know, that are here. Definitely. And so it doesn't need to be mine. We have them. So I'll just, yeah. you know,
figure it out. And then, yeah, this, and then sperm donor, I think that's super important. We went through a plethora of sperm banks from here to Europe. Wow. Like we did our due diligence when it came to sperm donors. And the best one to date that we absolutely love is Cryobank, California Cryobank. Mm-hmm. And they have like the coolest website. It's like Tinder for like literally sperm donors. Like baby pictures, voice messages, essays, full background,
medical records,
like
grandparents' medical records, great grandparents' medical records. Oh. It's like so thorough. And also the acceptance rate is extremely hard to get in. Like, you really, it takes them a year before they can even donate. So you really want to do this and give back. We found our sperm donor through there, but it wasn't overnight. This was definitely something that took us almost a full year. It's 8 months.
It literally felt like buying a house, because we would go on there and we would go through profile and profile and profile. And then we would see one that we really liked, because we both have very different requirements too. That's something that I think queer couples should talk about more is you think you're picky with who you date. Wait until you look for your sperm donor.
I was going to say.
That's a whole other ball game.
100%. Because there's so many things you need to take into consideration. Even when you were saying just the medical records and the grandparents' medical records, there's a lot.
Totally. And I've always when we started this process, I was I don't care what he looks like. I just want to make sure they have a clean bill of health. No cancers, no diabetes. I have a lot of diabetes and heart conditions in my family. So I was I just want beautiful, healthy baby. I don't care what it looks like. And Ian over here is okay, 6'4", minimum height.
No, I said 6'3". I'm
I'm 5'2". What?
I'm just 5, so I want to give them a chance. You know, I just want to give them, and it's not even guaranteed, you know, but maybe if I can help in that direction.
And she's colored eyes, maybe. I'm like, what? This is crazy.
I mean, if I'm going to pay for it, might as well.
That's
if I'm
so gonna funny. Put it in order.
But if it's the same price, might as well.
Yeah, you're like, there's a lot of little height on there.
All I was to say, it's really interesting when
and I wanted an athlete.
And you wanted an athlete. I'm like, okay, because she used to be a runner. She was a runner her whole life.
Yeah.
She's an athlete. I'm like, yeah, no big deal. Just 6'4", colored eyes, chiseled jaw, and an athlete. Got it. Okay.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
It just took a long time.
That's amazing. Yeah, but I think it's better to take your time with it, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Don't rush. But definitely
that selection process. Yeah.
Yeah. And California Cryobank they have free trials, which is what we tried. They have a 30-day free trial.
And we gave out on our page a free promo code where you can have you can just see how the website works.
It's fun. I think it's just a fun thing to do with your partner, just to see what's out there and to just see what you like and what they like. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's
that's cool.
There's no harm in having it in the bank, right? A little savings account, it's just your sperm savings account. That time comes, at least you're ready to go, because what you don't want is the doctor to be you've got no time. And now it's going to take you, you feel rushed to find the sperm. So it's just, take your time now if you got time, and that this is a part of that journey. We weren't married yet, first of all, that we weren't even engaged. That wasn't even a conversation, but we
bought sperm together.
We bought sperm together. We're at least this is where our priorities are telling us to pivot right now. And this is where we're at. And that was a part of our journey. And again, to whoever's timeline, your timeline is your timeline.
Yeah.
And what's really cool about California Cryobank is that if you don't use the sperm, they do have a buyback program. So if you don't use it all, they will buy it back. But at least that's an option, which a lot of sperm banks don't even do that. They're no returns.
Once it's done, sort of thing.
If you don't use it, they're we'll buy it back. And that's awesome. I think that's really great.
That's really good. I just learned so much in that whole conversation. That's amazing.
That's not scary.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also just the importance of even checking to see where your hormone levels are at. That's something I wouldn't even think about right now. I'll be 28 later this month, but still, everyone's so different. Yeah, just to check.
I was 28 when I started.
Yeah.
When we first started this journey, I was 28. And I was, again, told that I was going to be coasting through this. So it's just so important to check now and check everything. It's just really, really critical to at least have that information. If that's something that is on your table that you want down the road, because it does take time. And I think it's so important to.
When we talk about this too, we've said if we have daughters, I think you should be checking your stuff at 20, 21, just to see where you're at. If you can save for a first car, you can save for this whole process, just getting your body ready.
I would tell my daughter to freeze her eggs at 25.
Yeah.
Freeze them at 25. True. So then they're forever 25 years old. And if that is your journey, It you have bought yourself an infinite amount of time, as much time as you want or you don't want. Yeah. But at least it's on the table for you versus, like, had I think I'd waited another year, it wouldn't even be on the table for me anymore. It's barely on the table for me now. And, like, it's just, at the end of the day, as cliche as it is, it's not fair. Because we're all built so different and you don't know what card you're dealt until, you know, for some people it's super easy. For some people it's going to be hard. And it's just like, whatever you get is what you get. And it just, it's a sucky feeling when, you know, you want something so bad, but it's not going to be easy for you. So definitely. I think with our daughter, we're like, 25, don't get that bag. You better be saving those eggs. Like, that's the bag you need to secure.
That is good advice, honestly.
Oh, wow. We're trying.
For sure. Well, honestly, thank you both so much for your time. I had so much fun on this interview. I Sarah was really bummed that she couldn't make it, but yeah, we're glad we could catch you too. And I'm so excited to, like, just continue to follow your journey and honestly, like, wish you both all the best. It was really good to meet you guys.
Thanks. So this was a great conversation. Yeah. It felt like we were just homies just catching up. So thank you for making it.
Totally.
Maybe we'll have to come back with Sarah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, honestly, come back with Sarah. We'll probably have, like, so many more questions for you too. You're both so easy to talk to. Where can our listeners find you and keep up with you guys?
Yeah. Everywhere is EdenXJ. We're on everything.
Yeah. And also follow our queer movement, Preciosa Night, at Preciosa Night on Instagram. Yeah. But yeah, everything's EdenXJ.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We really enjoyed it.
We had so much fun.